On in the Zone 165, it's the end of the road for the Knicks after being knocked out of the elimination finals by City. We wrap the elimination finals round and talk about Cunningham, JBS, Boxall, Boyd and Hicks going away. In the New Zealand football section, Hayes disgraced himself again. We chat the under-17 shambles, under-20s pre-World Cup friendlies and, of course, the Chatham Cups coming up. All that and more on In the Zone 165. Oh, welcome to In the Zone 165. A little bit of a sad looking pod around today as we reflect on the end of a season of so much promise, wasn't it? And then just didn't sort of petered away. The loss to City on the weekend is I think even Ernie has said a disappointing end to the season. How did you guys feel come Monday morning?
Looking at the context of the season, obviously disappointing. I mean, we finished higher than them in the league. You know, had a home finals game. Which we hadn't lost before. We never lost the finals game at home before. So I think we have every right to expect to win and maybe, you know, see what Lady Fortune would offer us on Friday night against Victory. But having said that, I was always nervous about this game. I think when we were talking about potential opponents in the final series a couple of weeks ago, where, you know, I kind of thought that City would present a few problems for us, I wasn't feeling particularly optimistic on the day, so in a way it wasn't a terrible shock for me, but still disappointing.
Yeah, I think I'm a little bit in the same camp. I took it with you away last week in the pod. I took on your good doom and gloom mantle, and said that I couldn't rely on us to beat anyone these days, and so it turned out to be. It was a game a little bit like that, wasn't it? We went behind, and I thought we're going to rally here, and I banged $50 on us to win, because we'd had right. We'd had quite a good opening period, you know. We'd had plenty of possession in the attacking third, not a lot had come from it, but we'd had plenty of ball in the attacking part of the pitch. We kind of went behind to a slightly shitty goal. Manny playing shit Peter Crouch on side. And then I thought we would get back into it, but we instead of going up a gear, we kind of went down a gear.
It was fairly similar to previous games, wasn't it? I guess in the context of the whole season, you go, well, fourth, fifth, it's... If you took, at the start of the season, I think most people would say, you know, that's probably quite successful. But given where we were 6-8 weeks ago, I think everyone's kind of forgotten all the sort of the good bits and focused on the bad bits, and rightly so. I mean, we had a decent chance to make our first grand final. You know, it's petered away at the first finals. I mean, it's trying to sort of work out where it kind of went wrong, and I think a bit like last year, I think we sort of struggled with a bit of depth. I mean, our start 11 is pretty handy, and when things aren't quite going to plan in terms of what our game plan is, and Burns isn't quite having as much influence on games as he has, and Rowley and McGlinchey, we never really had that second, a really good second plan B. I mean, I think Griffiths was it, didn't have it, and I think the next plan from that was obviously putting Fenton into midfield, which I think exposed us defensively, which is a funny thing to say at the start of the, if you see that at the start of the season. I think it exposed us defensively because we play quite narrow, and I think our fullbacks are the one that gives us width, and that's what the role that Fenton did when he was at right back. Whereas you put Boxall and Manny, it's quite not the same danger, and I think it exposed us a wee bit defensively.
Yeah, I totally agree with that defensive exposure point, and especially, I mean, I love Michael Boxall, not quite as much as Tracy does, but I love Michael Boxall. I think he's a really good player. I think it's really sad that he's leaving, but I didn't think he had a good game against City. I thought I thought Novello tore up that left flank for them, and both of their goals, when they finished, the first one when it came out to Moy on the edge of the box, and the second one when it came out to Novello on the edge of the box, he was on the edge of the 18-yard box in Acres, and the dude coming out to him was Ben Sigmund, and tucked in behind him was Michael Boxall. So I agree. I think Ernie's tried to find some variety by pushing Fenton into midfield, and all it's done is make us poorer, really.
yeah, and even going forward, you know, it's Boxall's not, you know, Fenton's, I think Fenton's been quite good at right back this season, and I don't think, you know, Manny and Boxall can offer that same, I guess, danger in that front third, and certainly can't deliver as good a ball as Fenton has in the past. And so, yeah, we really struggled to create anything. I think, you know, Krishna probably had a dip in form, and that what caused Ernie to try to do that as well. And, you know, Manny's obviously had a bit of dip in form this past sort of, I guess, couple of months as well. And it's sort of, I think Ernie was trying to tinker to find solutions, and it didn't quite come out. And I think, you know, it was, everyone's going to question, you know, was it right to do this or this or this? But you probably had to find something. You can't just play 27 games with the same formation and the same
tactics. Yeah.
Because like City did, they defended well, got bodies behind the ball, certainly got more bodies in the box defensively than we did, you know, attacking wise, and you know, tried to break and did it successfully. So you've got to go hats off to them for implementing a pretty successful game plan.
Yeah, I think come the Christmas break and that period that the league had off, teams had really worked us out by then, and had worked out how to pack the box against us. And I think you're right. I think Ernie then went looking for alternatives. He realised he needed to sign someone. He signed Griff. Griff destroyed himself. It was just unfortunate. So we had a pretty unlucky run post the resumption of the league after the Asian Cup. And I think, you know, I think it'd be unfair not to just say that a good dose of that was a little bit of misfortune. On the flip side, you're right. I mean, when you look at our squad, it's very much set up to play the way we played pre-Christmas. Very much a couple of spares that are interchangeable with the ones that are on the field, but there's not a whole tactical game change on the bench.
It's not a class alternative. You know, you can fit, you know, Leah and Rodriguez if were interchangeable, and you know, he did change that, you know, based on, I guess, what other teams' midfields were like. To, you know, Leah was sort of used a bit more defensively, a bit more conservatively than Rodriguez was. But other than that, you know, Cunningham was, I guess, was a replacement for Krishna. But, you know, while he's a handy player, he's not a, you know, he's not a Burns type player.
No.
That's probably why he's going. That's something we need to look at next season, is, well, what is our game, you know, our plan B and plan C, and what types of players do we bring in to try to give us that variability?
Well, I guess it's as good a time as any to talk about that, because we've announced that we're releasing five. So we've released Hicks and Bonaventure. hashtag Phoenix announcement. No, we've released Hicks and Cunningham and
Schumacher.
Yeah, Josh Brindle-South, Boxall, and obviously Boyd, we already knew, was going to Portugal. So that's five out, straight out the door. Sounds like Boxall, Jason Pine just tweeted this morning that Boxall has signed in South Africa, according to South African media. So that's been rumoured for quite a while, that he's going over to South Africa to join Jeremy Brockie, but it sounds like that is now an official thing. Good on him. Who then, what are we looking for? What do we need to bring in? I mean, for me, we're now very thin with defensive cover, so we need to bring in someone as a replacement for Boxall, who is a good A-League defender that can come in and cover the ageing Andrew Durante and Ben Sigma. We've got to have someone of high quality off the bench to cover them. I think Boxall going is a real shame from that perspective.
Yeah, I think we don't have a clear transition plan for our centre-backs, and they are ageing is an understatement. So I think there needs to be something there. Yeah, we do. I mean, you can't fault the heart and things, but, you know, at some stage, the legs are going to say, I've done this for too many years.
Yeah, they're both getting to that age where they're going to do a Griff or a Paul Eiffel, you know, and something's just going to go, bing!
And at the moment, the cover for that would be Manny or Vinny Lear.
Yikes. Exactly.
We need to start a succession plan for centre backs. I think we probably need to be looking at, well, I was going to say a fullback, but I think reality is that I think we just need to invest some more time in Doyle. I think Doyle showed enough. I think he looked better than Manny has for the last few weeks. But Manny's another one who's advancing in years. We probably need to make sure that we've got fullback options. We've just discussed that we need that plan B in attack. You know, the loss of Griffiths, whilst a celebration for some of us, you know, wasn't an ideal result. So I think we need some options up front. And you would think that's where the import slot freed up by Cunningham will be, they'll look to fill. And then I think from there, other than those sort of areas, I think you're probably going to be looking at where we bring in some youngsters and sort of keep working on the development from the academy and things like that.
Yeah, I think the defensive cover issue is an interesting one. Dan and I were talking about this after the game, and one of the things that really strikes you over the last three seasons, and It's just how badly we performed in the last three of the season. Like, this is not a one-off thing. This has been the pattern of the last 3 years. And obviously not as pronounced this year because we had such a successful period leading up to the Christmas break, so we're in a pretty good position. But when you really look at the performance of the last 8-9 games of the season, I mean, we couldn't win a game at home, struggled to beat sides like Central Coast. It was, not good. And obviously some of those issues did relate to our inability to play the attacking game that we had been playing prior to the Christmas break. And we talked about our lack of width in the attack and how that impacted on us and our ability to create chances. But I do think that that drop-off in form does have a little bit to do with the age of our defenders. I think a lot of the goals we conceded late on in the season were quite soft. Just think about the game against Sydney here that we lost 3-0, Central Coast.
The two goals on Sunday?
Yeah, exactly, the two goals on Sunday. And it's not necessarily, an individual performance issue. I mean, Jura and Siggy were immense in the first two-thirds of the season. But I think just that age factor comes in late on in the season. And when you look at the first, early part of the season, there are a lot of games where we perhaps were holding on and managing to squeeze something out of them. And we completely lost that ability in the last third of the season because we're giving up a lot of stupid goals.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I don't know whether I haven't thought about it enough to know whether I really agree with it or not. I mean, I'm just thinking back to the game on Sunday night, and yes, we did concede two pretty weak goals. But at the same time, I mean, early on in the game, Juris come charging in from 30 yards with a flying, sliding tackle to block a shot on goal. You know, he doesn't look lethargic or elderly, or, it doesn't look like he doesn't have the energy to play or isn't switched on or is tiring. I don't know. Like, I think if you look at Ben Sigmund and Durante and their individual game-on-game performances, can you look at that and go, those guys look old?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I think it's a fair point, but I'm just
and
not sure.
And you think about the goals we have conceded recently, I can't really think of any ones that you could pin on them solely. I mean, in the weekend, there was one deflected off the post, so it's, I guess you could say that's a wee bit unlucky. First goal was Manny playing someone onside. The week before that, Fenton played someone onside. There was a penalty that Riera gave away.
I think it's more that we've exposed them rather than they've exposed themselves by being old.
What the core issue is, I don't know. But the point is, games that in the first half of the season we were getting something out of, we couldn't in the second half of the season because a lot of goals we gave up were soft. This is not a new thing. And like I said, it's not necessarily just Siggy and Drew. I mean, Manny's was terrible in the last 2 months. Obviously, tinkering between, is it Fenton right back? Is it Boxall? Who is it? That didn't help. And Riera is another guy who's getting on in years. I just do think that if a player comes out in the first 5 minutes, the first half an hour, and it looks like they can't play, then you never ever play them. When it comes to the 75th minute, do they start making bad decisions? Are they just half a step short? Because that's all it needs to be. You know, it's not being lethargic, it's just being half a step short on catching up to the player or half a step short in reading the game where you need to be. Because that's all it is.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I mean, they're not, I'm just trying to think of the other centre-back pairings in the league. I don't think they're heaps older than the other centre-back pairings in the league, are they?
It's a shame that Boxall is going because, the times he has played centre-back, he's looked pretty solid.
An ideal replacement.
And unfortunately, you can't really blame the club for this one because I understand there's a huge
chunk of change on the table.
For him. So there's no way the Phoenix can compete with that. So it's just one of those things you go, well, sorry. I talked to him on Sunday and he was keen to stay. It's just that the money difference isn't enough to keep him to stay.
Yeah.
And I don't know where you look really as replacements. I mean, I can't, off the top of my head, think of too many around New Zealand.
No, there aren't any in the academy that I can think of either that are sort of standouts that you go, well, you're 17, but you're going to be a great centre-back soon, so we'll bring you in. I think you've got to look to Australia, probably. Michael Eager,
I think you'd struggle to take a 17-year-old and throw them in the deep end at centre-back. It's not a position that I think you're mature enough to be playing unless you're someone really special, in which case you're probably not playing in the ASB position.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what I mean. There might be good centre-backs in the academy. I don't actually know that there are. But
they're not going to be ready in the next...
No.
And the Weenicks in the ASB Premiership generally played with a pretty patchwork centre-back pairing. I think we saw Blake in there at times. We saw De Miro in there at times. We saw Redenton in there at times.
I think that was them trying to have a look at things, see if they can make one.
You know, I mean, we watched the Weenicks at the weekend and Junior Stroud looked quite good the other week against Brooklyn, looked a little more patchy against Varsity at the weekend. He's a big lad, but, you know, I'm not even sure he's 17. He's in the under-17 squad, so he's possibly only 16. And, you know, there might be something there, or is it Sam Wilson, the other centre-back, I think?
Left-back.
I can't remember who the other centre-back was. And they look promising, but there's no way you could deep end them in the A-League. And there isn't anyone else.
What, sorry?
And there really isn't anyone else in the ASB Premiership that you'd say, you know, a New Zealand centre-back going, oh, yeah, no, they're a standout player. You know, when Siggy was signed, he was dominantly the best centre-back in the ASB Premiership.
He was a central midfielder.
What's that? No, he'd moved to centre-back by then. But he was dominantly the best centre-back in the ASB Premiership when he was signed.
Yeah.
And there is just no one in the ASB Premiership.
And he was 20 kilos overweight.
Yeah.
Yes. No, it's going to be hard to find someone. I guess they'll have to look in the Victorian Premier League and the New South Wales Premier League and see what's over there.
Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't joking when I said Mike Eager. I mean, he's in the right position. He's in the right age group. He'd be happy to be second fiddle to the older guys, I would think. He's a good player. I don't know. They've looked at him and discarded him in the past. What did Gilly say to me once? We can do better than Mike Eager.
Right at the moment, they don't have anyone, so that's not better.
Yeah.
The importance of retaining Burns is, I think, quite high, because at the moment we've got one foreign spot to give us some alternative striker, which, you know, opens up the whole world. As soon as Burns goes...
What do you mean alternative striker? You mean a striker?
Come on, you can't look at a player who scored 13 goals and another who scored 10 and say they're not strikers.
Sure I can. Ernie does.
Not a striker.
And so if you take Burns away, then you're looking for, you know, you're using your foreign spot for one striker, and then you're looking for a Kiwi or an Aussie for the other alternative.
Yeah, Rob Morrison yesterday gave a great interview to Simon Hill, which if you haven't read already on foxsports.com.au, do that. In fact, just stop listening to the podcast immediately and go and read it. Good, welcome back. In the interview, he said that Burns is a marquee, which I found interesting. I don't think we officially knew that, although I believe you guys might have had the inside word at the awards dinner the other night. So you guys get all the good gossip. I only heard about Hicks and Cunningham going. You guys heard about Burns being a marquee. Yeah. I also love the fact that they got denied by club management, and then today they've announced it. Anyway, in the interview, he also said a whole bunch of other really interesting things. He gave it in fairly stern form to everyone, which I love. And he was asked where they sit on the five-year license, and he said that they're continuing discussions. Can't talk about the specifics, but that everyone is it's in everyone's best interests to have stability, and that the FFA obviously want to do a new TV deal. So instability in terms of number of clubs is bad for them as well as it's bad for us. So I thought that was a really, really good point. He dealt really well with a question that Simon Hill put to him, where he said, Simon Hill's question was, let's deal with some of the accusations put forward. The TV rights deal with Sky isn't big enough. New Zealand football don't contribute. And as a consequence, Australia is essentially subsidising professional club football. And I thought his answer, Rob Morrison's answer, was just magnificent. I mean, he said, firstly, we didn't negotiate the TV deal. So the FFA signed up something they were happy with. We can't be blamed for that. Brilliant. He said that for him personally, the TV deal is not enough, and they're working on trying to lift that up. And he said also that New Zealand football is getting a good deal, and they're also working on trying to get some contribution from New Zealand football on that. But the best thing he said was on the subsidy issue, where he said he doesn't really like the word subsidy.
No businessman does.
Well, actually, every businessman does. It's free money from the taxpayer. He said that they think the FFA should be club neutral, and as a group of owners, they're putting private money into the Phoenix. Phoenix signed Nathan Burns. So does that mean that they, as a group of private owners, are subsidising the Socceroos? Like, the word subsidy is just silly. And if you're in the league, then you should be treated as being in the league, and everyone should be equal. And I thought he made that point superbly well. And his line at the end was, I don't think the subsidy argument carries much weight. Shut up, Simon Hill.
The one I love is the relationship good between you and the FFA. It's pretty good, but it's tricky elements. Everyone has their own patch to protect. The problem with negotiations like this is that some views in the media don't help. There are some journalists out there that are something of a mouthpiece for the FFA media department.
Brilliant.
Others reflect the bias of whoever their employer happens to be. None of that is overly helpful when you're negotiating. You don't want it to be played out in public. Well, that's almost exactly like what we've been tweeting, Facebooking, forumming, podcasting for the last 3 months.
He also makes a really good point about marquees. Simon Hill hits him up about, you know, we hear that you're anti-marquees. He's like, we're not anti-marquees. We've got a marquee that's Nathan Burns, and he's just been voted player of the year by the Australian media. am I missing something? And then he says, in terms of big name marquees, there have been some big names that we've seen, Heskey, Fowler, Duff, all EPL players. Don't think they've done very much for crowds. So the big money marquee's not a panacea. He really, honestly, he really dealt to him. It was, I'd love to have seen this in video because the written interview, you get the real sense that it was a heavyweight. Rob Morrison's a smart guy against a lightweight. Really, the questions are pretty patsy and Rob knocks them out of the park. And yeah, it's good. It's funny. It's the best thing I've seen from our club in ages.
Yeah, I have to say, the interviews and things I've heard with Simon Hill, he hasn't come across as quite the mouthpiece for the anti-campaign that the likes of Harper and Gatt and Cockerill and those morons are. I'll cut Simon Hill some slack there. I'm glad it was him that did the interview because
He's probably the only one that's interested in us to do the interview.
Morrison would have just strangled Harper, I would have thought.
Can you just imagine Terry giving an interview like that?
No.
Next one, some of those... Next time some of those media boards want an interview, they should give them Terry.
Yeah. Anyway, so that was brilliant from Rob Morrison. I guess just before we close out on the A-League, we should talk about the other game, the Adelaide Brisbane Roar game. I thought Brisbane might have a reasonable chance at this, and they did put on a pretty good show. Sucker punch from Goodwin early on with that ripper free kick. Have you seen this? He's probably 35, 40 out, and he gets it up and down and over the wall in the top corner with power, hits the back of the net.
And Jamie Young goal.
Beats keeper, yeah. So, buddy, good free kick.
He's I quite like Goodwin's skills. He's just an objectionable little cock.
There you go.
Wow.
Heard it here first.
Uses on a new bandwagon. what's the opposite of bandwagon?
Yeah, hate.
Can you classify that as bandwagon?
I'm looking to push him under a bandwagon.
Witch hunt. It's a new witch hunt.
Which one?
Something like that. Anyway, and then after that, Brisbane didn't quite go to pieces, but Broich scored a goal from one of the most amusing bits of defending you've seen in a long time. Who's the right-sided Adelaide centre-back? Anyway, big lumping ball through from Brisbane. Centre-back got it facing his own goal, but turned comfortably out of trouble. But then for some reason decided to have a look back and see if his goalkeeper was free. Realised he probably should just go forward, changed his mind again, got robbed by Broich.
Oh no, it kind of fell over.
Tried to roll it back, but just fell over and got robbed by Broich, and Broich tucked it away. But that was sort of the only real danger they had.
No, I thought they were quite good in that second half. Yeah, I thought that they were looking the more likely.
Second half, that was still first half. Oh. Yeah. Second half, you're right. They came right back into it and then Mobile nicked it.
Yeah, I think I tweeted about 10 minutes after Mobile came on, who I don't think is a very good player, Jamie Young will probably smash a clearance into Mobile's face and it'll go in as a winner. And wasn't that far off.
Anyway, so Adelaide got up there, which is probably the right result in terms of football purity. But yeah, anyway. And that leads us on to this weekend, Friday night, Melbourne Victory versus Melbourne City, and Sydney versus Adelaide United on Saturday. So I guess we're looking at hopefully a Victory Adelaide final. I'd hate to see Sydney win it.
I think Victory fans are a bit nervous about that game.
Big bananas game.
City tend to do quite well against them when they're not expected to. Sounds like it's going to be a massive crowd. Probably going to sell out the Etihad. So I'm sure the FFA were happy about last week's result.
You know, I'm hopefully going to get my Sky hooked up at my new house just in time to watch it. Happy days. Anyway, so that's all we've got for the A-League. Sayonara to another A-League season. And I guess the one note that we should finish on is a massive congratulations to the squad. Best season we've had. Great football up until Christmas. it's been a real joy to be on the roller coaster, even though the sort of last few months of the roller coaster seem to be just that kind of interminable cranking up the hill. You're just waiting for the thrills to start again and they just never do.
There's a lot to like about the club at the moment, I think.
Ah, shit, yeah.
Like, you know, good solid owners, good players, good coach, good staff, even Schmitty.
good staff, not big staff.
No.
Quality, but, not quantity.
Committed staff.
Yeah.
Open and very, friendly and will speak to anyone, and looking at other clubs, seems like we're in a pretty good space.
We are, yeah. And the club's done so much this year. I mean, the academy, I was always a bit iffy about the whole Scots College thing and that it might make it just a rich kids kind of playground sort of thing, but they seem to have done a really good job of it. The Weenix and the ASB Premiership have been magnificent, and a really good breeding ground for youngers. It just goes to show that there are good young players out there that just needed a place to train and play with quality, you know. And that's really exciting. The Hutt-Reck games are the best thing the club's ever done. And awesome.
Boxy, thoughts?
Great venue. great location. superb. That's the sort of stadium we need. Rob Morrison addressed that actually in his interview. He said that there was money on, there was finance available for the Petone Stadium, but the local residents killed it, so we can't see it happening again in the near future, which is a real, real shame. But it is what it is. So, yeah, Hutt-Rec games were well executed, and, yeah, it's been a ripper season. Yeah. Ernie, Domi, well played.
Yeah. I think that they've done a lot of things right, which is a nice change, because at the end of most seasons we've sat there and listed the things that we've done wrong.
Yeah, it's been a laundry list of f-ups. So it's pleasing to, you know, to not have such a long list.
Just be nice for Wellingtonians to jump on board a bit earlier.
Yeah. I think we know now what our stable crowd is, and I think it'll edge along, but won't go ballistic unless we win the league.
And yeah, in a way it was disappointing that our best kind of period coincided with, you know, the Hutt games, where we could have got crowds of maybe 15,000.
Yeah, and the Cricket World Cup.
Yeah, Cricket World Cup happened, and yeah. And then at the back end of the season, obviously, the performances weren't that great, so it was unfortunate that there was a collision of factors outside of the club's control that made the crowds worse than they would have been, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's still our highest crowd since season one, so which is...
Bloody good. Crew data dance, high quality.
Going in the right way, which is...
If we're just talking about the laundry list of f-ups, bad spelling is right up there. Very poor spelling. Anyway, we're going to leave the A-League there. That's pretty much the end of the season, although I'm sure we'll talk about the finals games as they go on. We're going to come back shortly after Dale's favourite tune of the week, talk about New Zealand football. All right, New Zealand footy time, and our favourite dead horse is back to be flogged again. It's the under 17 squad and Melodrama Central.
Hashtag alignment.
Hashtag alignment. So after sacking two perfectly good coaches and appointing one perfectly terrible media commentator, they have organised a tour for the under 17s to Doha, I think, to play Qatar.
And Croatia.
And you'd think this would be an exciting opportunity for the coach that's just taken over and sort of a minor coup to get to know his players, to suss things out in what I think is their only overseas opportunity before the World Cup. And is he going? Is he He's taking the time off to go to America to make plans for a tour there next year by his high school team. So I guess it's pretty apparent where his priorities are. And by association, because they're aligned, where Anthony Hudson's priorities are. I mean, what a joke, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I just, jaw-dropping.
I mean, on the upside, I suppose, that means Zorisic will take the team, and from what I've told, he's a better coach. But, like, what the hell is going on? How do you not square this away? Danny, we want you to take over the under-17s. You have to go to Doha. We've got this tour organised. Ah, I'm busy. Shit. Maybe we should rethink appointing you then. Yeah. Maybe you should change the f***ing plans that you had to go to America for a junket with your school, which is a year away yet. I mean, what's he going over there to do?
Eat
tacos and shake hands.
And it's not just that, you know. It's about feathering his own nest. He's trying to make his academy and his setup at Sacred Heart more saleable, you know, and to try and increase the ability of that to compete with the Phoenix setup at Scots College. It's just...
Yeah.
New Zealand football just shooting themselves in the foot repeatedly.
Well, I think they're trying to shoot Phoenix, but they're missing and shooting under 17 players in the nuts.
Entirely right. Yeah. You know, there's rumours of players being pressured to go to Sacred Heart rather than go to Scots College. It should never happen.
No.
You know, why would you waste the money of the subs from your players all over the country when there's another organisation doing the job better than you have ever managed to do it yourselves?
Yeah. Andy Martin approached us probably 6 or 8 months ago and asked if we would... he said he was doing the constitutional reform of New Zealand football, and they were looking for stakeholder bodies to become voting members of New Zealand football, and they wanted to get fans involved. And it sounded like a good idea, because all of a sudden fans get a voice at the top table and actual votes at New Zealand Football Congress meetings and things. But what he really wanted to do was to be able to say that we were on board with everything that he was doing. And so we bailed out of that in a big hurry. And I think I'm really concerned about the direction. It's just some of the little things in the direction of Andy Martin's New Zealand football. He's been pretty quiet. He's appointed Hudson and just sort of got his head down. While he said all the right things when he was appointed, some of the actions of the organisation since have been really, really concerning.
It's really only been the last month, though, hasn't it? Like, and it seems like...
Well, it's only been the last month that they've done anything.
Think they have a more, you know, comprehensive All Whites program, which is something that we've always desperately needed, and no one's really bothered to put the money into it. So I guess it's basically that.
Yeah, but doesn't it smack of Graham Seaters' New Zealand football when they piled money into World Cup qualifying program, didn't qualify, and then everyone quit and we were broke.
Yes. Like,
that was the context under which Frank Van Hattem and Ricky Herbert took over the whole ship and then righted it again by qualifying us. You know, it was them that bailed us out of the big hole that Graham Souter put us in. So are we not just heading down that path again for the greater glory of Anthony Hudson?
It certainly seems like they're boosting funding in some areas, and I'm surprised where this money's coming from. So yeah, I might see in three years' time how those decisions come back to bite them. Because you need a sustainable, you know, football federation, and you know, banking all your hopes on World Cup qualification is pretty high risk and, high reward, but chances are that most times we're not going to qualify, so you can't be banking your future funding purely on that.
Mm. Anyway, it's the shambles that's going on with the under-17s is a pretty depressing signal anyway. So good luck to that squad as they go off to Doha with their assistant coach. I think those games are later in May, so we'll follow those with great interest. The under-20s are also in the middle of their World Cup preparation. They had a 3-2 loss at North Harbour Stadium to what appeared to be an Australian makeshift side, from what I can tell based on the forums. So take that with a massive grain of salt.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's just a bit of a younger under-20s group for them because they're looking to qualify for Rio, maybe? I think. But you look at, just looking at their scorers, Riley Woodcock, he's an A-League player. George Blackwood's also an A-League player with Sydney. So they're not exactly... Yeah, nobody's. So yeah, Australia won that 3-2 after I think we were 1-0 up and 2-1 up. Sounded like Australia probably the better side. A few comments from a couple of people I know saying that we were quite physical and probably not as technical as Australia, which I don't think that's any surprise to anyone who's been around New Zealand football for 20 odd years, maybe longer. So we'll see how they go. I think they've got another game on Thursday against Panama.
Qatar, Ghana, Australia and Panama are all floating around here playing games. They're playing against each other too if you want to get out and watch some football. There was a game on Monday night. The next one's Qatar versus Australia on Thursday at North Harbour Stadium at 4 o'clock, so really convenient viewing time. New Zealand play Panama after that though at 7 p.m. On Thursday. Then Panama play Australia and then we play Qatar. Those games are on Sunday, 1 p.m. and 4 p.m. And then Ghana play some weird New Zealand invitation 11. I've got no idea what that's all about. And Qatar play Panama and Ghana play Australia on Wednesday at 1 and 4 p.m. again. So plenty of football on if you're in Auckland, but of course Aucklanders being Aucklanders, I'm sure none of you will go and watch it.
Zing.
Back down at the budget end of the football spectrum, our regular Central League wrap sees Napier City Rovers still sitting top of the league and Western Suburbs 5 points adrift of them in second. Results of the weekend, Western Suburbs had a 2-2 draw with Petone. It looked like Petone were going to nick that, I think, and then Chang got a second goal to give Western Suburbs the draw. Stopout lost to Palmerston North Marist, who are going reasonably well this year. That was a 3-2 win for Palmy at Stopout. Tawa got on the board, got 3 points out of Miramar Rangers, which is a pretty shock result, it has to be said. Must be the excitement of playing back at Redwood Park. Tawa 2 there, Miramar Rangers 1, I believe, that the Tawa winner was scored with about 15 to go, and then they parked a big red and yellow bus.
Apparently they deserved it though.
Right.
From
you heard that from someone at Tawa or someone at Ma?
No, neutral. Neutral observer. Neutral. Yeah.
There's no such thing in Wellington football, come on.
No, I back this neutral's view.
Okay. Yeah. Alright. Well played the Tawa. Everyone loves an underdog. Lower Hutt City lost comfortably to Wellington Olympic. Corrales, Helikias and Norku scored for Olympic and Finney scored for Lower Hutt, but wasn't enough. Lower Hutt still eighth on 6 points. And Napier City Rovers, who, as I say, are comfortably top of the league, they palmed Wairarapa United 5-2. That's a big result.
Oh, yeah, I watched the highlights of that game last night on the YouTube. Rapper gifted them at least 3 goals from corners.
Phoenix in disguise.
Yeah, no, just two where the keepers come charging out and missed it. Third where he'd come charging out and attackers got there before him. So
the Sean Gillespie keep for
Wairarapa. No, it was Matt Byron in goal, who's normally quite good but obviously quite small. So
that's a large on the bench,
yeah,
so you've got to wonder whether maybe
won't be long till it's all changed there. Back in the league below, Capital Premier, has been a coaching change. Pedro Garcias has quit his coaching role at Upper Hutt City Football and has been replaced by Team Wellington assistant and former Petone and Miramar coach Mark Foster for the rest of the season. It'll be interesting to see whether or not Fozzie can do anything to lift them off the bottom of the table. Waterside Karori are up the top with Wellington United, the Phoenix reserve team. They're both on 18 points, both 6 wins from 6. Wharfies had a 2-0 over Miramar Rangers and Wellington United had a 4-1 over Victoria University.
the old Weenix are going to struggle in a few weeks with all the players away, aren't they?
Yeah, got lots of players away. First of all, at that under-17 camp in Doha. I wonder if they can just say that they don't want to go either, seeing as Danny Hay's not going. So they made other plans. Yeah,
they've got an important cap prem game.
Yeah,
there might be. Oh no, don't you get? Aren't you allowed to ask for a bye if you get three or more
international duty?
Yeah,
I wonder if that applies.
I think that does.
Yeah, I think it does.
I wonder if that applies for them being in Hong Kong the following weekend.
No, not international duty. So that's the week after. So you'd imagine they go a little bit early to Doha. So they're away for 2 weekends in Doha, and then the third weekend after that, they're at the Phoenix Sevens. Some of them. In Hong Kong, so they'll probably be away 4 games, I reckon. But yeah, Dale, you might be right. That could be genius.
I might need to check that, but it's certainly the case at ASB level.
Yeah, I think it applies. I think that applies in the local leagues too, because I know Miramar have used it to their advantage.
They have. They have with last year, I think, didn't they? They got a buy in somewhere.
Yeah, they had under 20s
play. Yeah, and I remember everyone kicking up a stink. So
yeah.
Oh dear.
Here comes a conspiracy theorist.
I'm going to get on the Haunted Dummy as soon as we're out of the podcast. So in the league below, what else happened? KCU beat Apart 3-0. Apart adrift on 1 point at the bottom of the table, but that was only their first win, so they're only a couple of points ahead. Brooklyn Northern United got beaten by Petone's reserves 4-2, and Wellington Olympics reserves had a 2-2 draw with Island Bay. So yeah, like I say, Wharfies and the Weenix storming away at the top of that table, 6 points behind them. Victoria University, slight surprise package. And then Island Bay United are fourth.
Yeah, University, I thought, gave a pretty good account of themselves against the Weenix. I think they probably unlucky not to have more than one, and just United just a bit younger and keener and quicker. There was quite a bit of whining in the game.
Well, from one of the Victoria University spectators as well, I had some absolute awful banter. He was yelling out to one player, something like, "When you don't make it, we may give you a chance here at Victoria University," at the time you were losing as well, which is really...
And I think it was to Gianni Bazookas, whose father was standing too long from him and isn't shy of verbal himself.
So. or indeed a physical.
There were words being exchanged on the sideline.
Yeah. Shocking verbal game.
Yeah.
Really poor.
University students widely renowned.
It was like a parent or something. Yeah. So
it was probably just a passing old man.
Club stalwart.
Anyway, the much more interesting thing is the Chatham Cup Round 1 draw, which is coming up this weekend. The Chat Cup. We love the Chat Cup here on the pod. And there are some tasty poundings to be meted out.
which do you think will be the biggest?
I'm pretty attracted...
Got to be Bubble Stokes
I'm Valley, pretty surely. Attracted by Bubble Stokes Valley, but I'm also attracted by Island Bay 99.
What about North Wellington, Wellington United?
I hope that's a pounding. I hope there is pounding given out there. But, that North Wellington side are actually pretty handy. Craig Alderdice, Darren Sheridan, they're not rubbish by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
It's the ANZ, Association 11.
The Howe boys.
Yeah. What's his name?
Peter.
Because Charlie Howe's involved in the management, so his son Peter plays. Darren Sheridan works for Charlie Howe at ANZ, and so does Gray Alderus, I think. Well, there's some association there. Anyway, by the way. The draw, if you haven't looked it up, is Stokes Valley at home to Wellington Olympic at Delaney 1, Saturday the 9th at 2:30 p.m.
Stokes Valley have an awful luck with draw. I think last year they got... I think they've always had Central Leagues for the last few. Last year they had Lower Hutt.
Yeah.
I think they may have had Lower Hutt the year before that as well. I vaguely recall them having Central League teams the whole way through.
If ever a Central League team was going to go and have a meltdown at a lower league ground, though, it'd be Olympic. So, you know.
It'd be a sight to see, though.
So much so.
Is Stokes Valley where some of the old Upper Hutt players have gone to play?
No, there was rumours that was going to happen, but most of those old Upper Hutt boys are playing for Upper Hutt
Cap
3 or Cap 5.
Right.
Yeah, they'll have Sam Blackburn, who's an Upper Hutt local, giving them all the inside goss and some directions to get out to Stokes Valley. Anyway, Waterside Karori are at home to Petone. That could be a really good game. Mm. Petone are a decent side, and so are Wharfies. So that's 2:30 at Karori 1.
It's probably pick of the round, I'd say.
Yeah, probably. Tawa are at home to Kapiti Coast United. That's likely to be a dire game. It's a banana skin for Tawa, but I can't see Kapiti Coast going to Redwood and getting much. They haven't had much of a season in Cap Prem. Wainui are at home to Victoria University, which is a game I find hard to really
Excited about.
Yeah, well, not get excited about, but it's hard to pick. You know, Vic Uni going all the way over to Richard Prowse. I mean, Wainui Mata in Cap 1. So you would expect Vic Uni to win pretty comfortably, but who knows? Every time you go to Richard Prowse, weird things can happen. Seatoon are at home to Havelock North Wanderers. Does anyone know anything about Havelock North Wanderers, apart from the fact that they're from Havelock North?
I was talking to a Seatoon player yesterday. He said that they've got injuries and things, so they may just flag it. They don't, you know, they're more worried about trying to get back into Cap Prem from Cap 1.
Fair enough.
And so they were talking this week that they may rest players that have got niggles and things and play a bit of a sub-strength team. But Havelock North could be horrid, and they may win it anyway.
North Wellington are at home to Wellington United, and it's the Phoenix Reserves, of course. I can't see Cap 1 North Wellington beating a pretty bloody good Wellington United side, but anything can happen in the cup, I suppose. And as I said before, that North Wellington team isn't terrible. So
I think being on turf will help United. United looked a bit scrubbier when they had to play at Kilburn on Saturday compared to when we've seen them playing on the turf at Wakefield. So I think turf will probably suit them more. They probably spend most of their lives training and everything on it, so they're probably more used to it.
Lower Hutt City are at home at their new turf to Up Hutt City in the Battle of the Valley. Could be one to get along and have a giggle at. I can't imagine it being beautiful football. But a return for Mark Foster to his old club, Lower Hutt. He used to play 200 games or something for Lower Hutt. So, yeah, he'll take Up Hutt City back there, and they'll be trying to get their season back on track with a cup upset. You know, they're both battling. Neither of them is particularly amazing. Could go either way, I reckon.
I hadn't realised that's a curtain raiser for us.
Yeah.
Oh, because of the Nighthawks.
If it goes into extra time, it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, we're at 5 o'clock on
Right. Get along there and watch that then.
I'd make a run for the car park as soon as the game finishes, because you don't want to see what's on next.
Yeah. And then the last three games in the central region, Brooklyn Northern United at home to North End from Palmerston North, Wairarapa United at home to Miramar Rangers. That could be interesting if Rangers have got their full-strength team back.
But they're cup-tied to Team Wellington, because you have to... Before you can play...
Play two games.
You have to... No, I think it's days now. It's 10 days or something. And I don't think it's quite enough, so they'll...
So they won't have their full strength team back, so you would expect probably Wairarapa United to win that at home. And then Island Bay United are at home to Nainai in a game that Island Bay United should win. Nainai have to make the big trip to the Bay. For now, though, that's all we've got for you this week on Pod 165. We're very quickly approaching the end of the pod road. If you'd like to sponsor us to go to the FFDU Awards in Sydney, we need to raise about $4,000 in about 7 days. So if you're feeling wealthy and you love the pod, or perhaps you're on drugs, do email Dale at yellowfever.co.nz with your offers, or just post your checks to Dale, care of Yellow Fever.
Checks won't clear in time. Oh, cash only, thanks.
Yeah, Terry, none of your checks, thanks.
We'll offer services in return.
Yeah, anything.
We also still need a van to get us around the Under-20s World Cup, too. So add that to the grovelling list while we're here.
Righty-ho, that's it for us from this week. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.